Ms. Newton. Thank you, ma'am. I've got 9:05. We'll go ahead and call this regular meeting of the Coryell County Commissioners Court to order at this time, noting that all members of the court are present. For those of you that are here in person, if you've got an electronic device, we'd ask that you place it on silence at this time. And for those that are participating by Zoom, we would ask that you place your device on mute until such time that you would need to address the court. We'll begin this morning with a word of prayer. God, we are so thankful to have you in our lives, and we come before you humbly asking for the forgiveness of our sins. And Lord, we, as always, we are so thankful for the many blessings that you can continue to bestow upon us. And we appreciate you watching over us and the people that you provide here on earth, our first responders and our military that protect us as you watch over us from heaven. Lord, we're going to humbly ask that you place your hand of guidance and wisdom upon this court so we may do here on earth what honors you in heaven. We ask all these things in your son's holy name. Amen.
Amen.
In the pledges to our flags, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. The next item on our agenda is the public forum. Citizens may address the court on any matter other than matters concerning county personnel or matters under litigation. Each citizen will be allocated 5 minutes with a total time not to exceed 30 minutes. Is there anyone here in person today that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone that is participating by Zoom that would like to address the court this morning? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move on to item number 5, which is the consent agenda. Noting that there are 5 items there listed. I won't read through all of those. The court may consider to approve the consent agenda as all items listed, or you may choose to select any or all of those to consider individually.
I don't have E.
You don't have?
Yeah, it wasn't printed.
I think they're probably in your inbox, maybe.
Well, sir, this one is July the 22nd. That was in my inbox. And this was July the 20th. This is also July. I do not have August.
You do not have the minutes from the August Commissioner's Court?
Yes, sir.
I've got those.
We do have A, B, C, and D.
I've got those in my packet.
I don't know. This morning.
Okay, maybe that was the disconnect that the August went out.
You give me the two for the 22nd and then the 40th.
The 4th was the court tabled possible action on a contract for the current health insurance procurement for the budget of 2026 after a motion by me and a second by Ryan. And then moves down to August the 5th, 2025. The court tabled possible action on the contract for the court for county health insurance procurement for the budget of 2026 in a regular commissioner court meeting on Tuesday, August the 12th, after a motion by Scott Weddle, second by Kyle Matthews. Number 6 is the court-approved court order CC-25-06. Court granted discretionary exemption to the competitive bidding requirements after a motion by me and a second by Keith Taylor. And there's an attachment that was to do with the radios on the court-approved budget amendment number 8, FY 2025, to support the purchase of the radios for the sheriff's office after motion by Commissioner Weddle and second by me. And then report for given. It looks like it's all there.
Okay. I make a motion to accept an agenda A, B, C, D, and E.
Second.
We've got a motion to approve the consent agenda from Commissioner Basham and a second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussions on item number five? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number six on the agenda is the road and bridge report. Mr. Latham.
We've got 105 open service requests, and we've completed 64. Laid and added base 17 roads and locations, and weighted 69 roads. Repaired 3 low water crossing approaches and 8 low water crossings themselves to work on. Cleaned out 2 cattle guards, chip sealed over base, County Road 255, 272, and 274. Cleaned out 2 CMPs, cleaned ditches at 6 locations, removed 16 trees from falling into roadway, cleared debris from some low water crossings at 12 locations, pushed fence row 137, did a little edging or spraying on the edges of the roads at 4 locations, the limes from roads and lime core roads, mowed grass at 45 roads, patched 17 locations, put up the cones and warning signs in 46 spots, and only installed 1 county road name sign, no reflectors or curb signs. Put up some barricades, 24 locations that beat through some of the floodings there. Repaired 32 washed out roads and 18 washed out CMPs. Repaired 1 CMP, installed 1 new one, and replaced 1. Swept 6 roads, hauled off brush from 11 locations, and trimmed trees on 9 roads. Still pretty much working on work orders and chipping away at them. So,
make a motion to accept the road and bridge report.
Second.
Got a motion to accept the road and bridge report from Commissioner Basham, second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion on item number 6? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 7 is update and actions on grants include but not limited to the SS4A. I believe we're still in the process of submitting for reimbursement on that. Is that correct, Mr. Belt? Or was that just on HMP?
So the SS4A, we have submitted for reimbursement and been paid for that. We had submitted a application for implementation funds that was not granted. And I believe the board decided the last time, due to the changes in the application process for SS4A, we were not going to apply for SS4A implementation funds this go around. That's my recollection. So I don't think if there's anything wrong with it right this second.
Okay. Thank you. And I believe your recollection is correct. We will remove that from future meetings until we are at a point where we might want to consider implementation. Hazard mitigation plan.
Hello. Got all the documents ready. The uploaded them all. I just got to follow up with those ladies and see what the issue is. I've heard from.
Okay. On the RCP, I am still working through the new legislative actions that the state has taken concerning subdivision and developments within counties. That's going to impact our subdivision, the update to our subdivision regulations. And I believe as soon as I can get that, I need to also talk with MRB. But as soon as we can get kind of a 80-90% solution on that, they'll be able to incorporate our hazard mitigation plan, community wildfire protection plan, those things into the plan overall. And I believe that's what they're waiting on from me at this point.
Did you see Brooke's email about a workshop?
I did not, but when she was here at her last meeting, I know she had mentioned that, and I've been looking for some white space on my calendar to try to get something coordinated so we can get that in there. But I've not lost sight of we need to have a workshop, I think, discuss some of those things. Anything else on the RCP? Community Development Block Grant, CDBG MIT. We had our kickoff meeting last week. Was it last week, Mr. Latham? Week before. My days are running together. Anyway, we had a kickoff meeting. I thought it was a very good meeting. We've got the four projects identified. I won't put words in Mr. Latham's mouth, but we had contracted with Langford many, many years ago for the grant management of this, and almost kind of got a like glazed over look from a couple of people in Road and Bridge about how easy this seems like it may be and the reduced workload that we'll have on the county by having a grant management team on board. I don't believe we're going to be asking Mr. Belt to upload anything into Tiger. So he may be a little bit happy about that as well. But the met with the engineers, talked with them. Their initial assessment is that there are three of the four projects that seem to be very similar in nature, and they're going to try to package those three. And then the one project over in Coppers Cove, they'll bid it out, you know, as an individual project, and that potentially reduce costs overall, you know, under our funding limitations. But we're moving forward after a long, long wait. Any questions under CDBG MIT?
No, but there's about 13 documents that that are attached to the CBG MIT that they forwarded out to everybody that says we need to address it and approve it, Commissioner's Court.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else under CDBG MIT?
Right. That was my question. Are we going to take action on those items under this item? I don't remember seeing another item on here about that, but I'm going to miss it.
Not today. We'll have that on our August 23rd meeting. I think it's August 23rd. 26th. So anything else to cover under CDBG MIT? Okay. DR 4781, we continue to work with FEMA on that as Road and Bridge continues to work through repairs. The Cat A and the Cat B, I believe, has already been submitted up to the review committee or the review level for FEMA. And I believe we are on the cusp of submitting for one of the initial rounds of our Category C under completed projects. Any questions under 4781? Okay. And then the Leon Cat House Flood Project. I don't know if any of you happened to watch KXXV last week, but there was a very good story that tied the flood mitigation efforts in Coryell County to what the special session for the legislature is discussing right now, and those efforts that were taken by the American Conservation Foundation, Natural Resource Solutions, as well as Blackland as part of the Texas A&M AgriLife system, and all the efforts and work they've done. So basically, we were kind of the foundation of that in those studies and analysis, and they believe that they can get across 100 counties in Coryell County, or 100 counties across the state, they'll be able to implement that model that they had developed for us within 9 months. Huge thanks to the GLO for their initial set of funding and the expanded funding. I think it's going to be a great a great program for the state overall. Any questions about the Leon and Cow House flood project? Okay. We'll move on to item number 8, which is to consider proposing a tax rate for tax year 2025. We've discussed some budget criteria. We've talked various tax rates that would apply. Basically, the no new revenue rate is $0.43739 per $100 of evaluation. The voter approval rate, which is what we cannot exceed without going to a vote, is $0.53021 per $100 of evaluation. And then our current rate is $0.44824 per $100 of evaluation. I'll remind the court that once the proposed rate is set, we cannot exceed that. However, we can go below that.
Doug, where are you getting that language from about proposed rate and not being able to go above or below?
Well, one is from Mr. Carruthers, and what he has cited is tax code under section 26.
2605 talks about the notice of the hearing for the setting of the tax rate. But I don't see anything about the process is not the same for the tax rate as it is for the budget as far as a proposed and then the hearing and then the final.
Correct.
So there's not the proposed tax rate.
I believe there is, because the proposed tax rate has to have a notice set with it for the hearing.
For the adoption of the tax rate.
Yes, for the adoption.
I think the notice, I don't think the notice contains a proposed tax rate. I think it has the notice required by law for all the different things. And then at the hearing on the adoption of the tax rate, if it adopts a tax rate, I don't think there's a procedure for proposing a tax rate, and then doing the notice of hearing and then adopting a tax rate.
Yeah, Brandon, 2606B2, that requires the if the proposed rates can exceed the no new revenue rate, then we have to propose the notice of the public hearing on the tax increase, which would state the proposed rate, no new revenue rate, and voter approval rate, and the date of the hearing.
So it's got all those, yeah, all the little options in it. But it has to contain a proposed tax rate.
You said 2602?
2606. So, as you know, it's the hearing. This is only if you exceed the, if it's a tax increase, exceed the non revenue rate in your post that.
So it exceeds the non revenue rate. So did we not go through this process last year because we were not exceeding that rate? Or did we go through it and not even notice?
We did. That's last year's notice.
What rate did I get set at last year?
44,824.
I believe the proposed was higher than that.
Yeah, it was 47,37.
Yeah, 47,3.
So did we set that based on the proposed budget, or have we come up with that number last year, 47,37?
47,370 was based off of the budget, the proposed budget.
Well, that would make sense. That's my, because it says that the proposed budget should include a, I can't remember the estimate sort it uses, of the amount of revenue that would be required to fund the proposed budget.
There is a statement, yes.
So that number was based on the information in the proposed budget last year.
That's correct.
Okay. So did Commissioner's Court take a vote on setting the proposed tax rate at 47,370 last year?
I couldn't find it in there.
Or did that number just come out of the proposed budget?
Well, no, it would have. Yeah, there had to be. I don't know what date it was because we have to publish. You see down there further in that notice, we have to publish how they vote on their proposed rate or against or absent. So I don't remember what to them. They did this stuff.
You must have been sick that day.
Yeah, I guess we did on the 13th of August. Yeah, it's not that I have an eidetic memory, but I went back and listened to that. Yes. We did. The judge made a motion on it. I seconded it. And then Taylor Basham, Judge Miller voted yes. Mr. Matthews and I voted no. On the proposed rate of 4.7.
How are we supposed to come up with a proposed rate without a proposed budget?
There's a budget that has been discussed. And it's kind of a question of what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Because how can you propose a budget if you don't have a proposed rate to determine those revenues? I didn't write any of those statutes.
They didn't have them both laying in front of them while they were working down in Austin, but they would probably.
I appreciate your observation, Mr. Bell.
Will you have a proposed budget here, sitting there, Judge?
If I can get a tax rate, yes.
So you're going to base what we're going to budget for the year off the tax rate?
Yes. Because what we've been working off of over the past month is a rate of 44824. And if you apply that to what we've worked through up to this point, it gives us a reserve in our M&O of approximately 6%.
Well, the last budget that you brought in here was 53 something and said, here it is, fix it.
That's the upper end is the 53.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just kind of recapping. And we went through it. Did you adjust it any from the conversations that we had?
Yes.
Because I find it very difficult to come up with a proposed tax rate if you don't have a budget. Because I don't look at it as a chicken or the egg thing myself. Either are going to be able to fund something or have a plan to fund something, and that tax rate is proportionate to that budget, I believe. But that's why I was asking about the budget.
Yeah.
The proposed budget.
Yeah.
So you're not going to do a proposed budget unless.
Do we have a proposed tax rate?
Proposes a tax rate.
That's correct. Because I'm not going to file a proposed budget that's got a 6% reserve. I'm not going to do it.
But am I right or wrong that in the past we have never proposed a tax rate prior to the filing of the proposed budget?
Last year we did. Well, I take that back. Last year, we didn't bring it to the court until the proposed budget had been filed, because we filed the budget at the voter approval rate. I'm not going to file a budget at the voter approval rate unless this court says that is what they want to do.
I guess that's the source of my confusion with other things, is that I don't recall us ever trying to figure out what we were going to set the tax rate at before we had a budget to look at and work through and decide what we couldn't stand with it. Because I think it's safe to say that we can't stand the 6% reserve and we can't stand the voter approval rate. So I could be somewhere in the 23rd.
Is there a deadline, Mr. Carruthers, on the proposed tax payment periods?
Well, I mean, there's not a deadline, but there are a lot of deadlines in the budget hearing.
Yeah.
Posting the notice of those hearings and the tax rate hearing, posting that notice. There's not like a...
I was just thinking if we waited till the 15th, then we would have a proposed budget. I think that's supposed to be filed then. But
outside the old time to vote on the budget, Judge. We don't talk about it the other day.
September 9th.
That's also the day you're depending on adopting tax rate.
There would be a hearing on the budget and tax rate, and we would vote on the budget and tax rate.
Mr. Brothers, am I reading this right? That 5 days notice of public hearings on the tax rates was required to be given?
Yes, sir. 10 days on the budget, 5 days on the rate.
We have to put print in the paper on Saturday. Is it same as requirements as the other stuff? Run it in the paper and post it on the stuff?
Yeah. And yeah, they only publish on Saturday, so. So the budget hearing would have to be posted by August 30th. And so with the tax rate.
So there's two, from the budget, my recommendation is there's two timelines on there. It's no more than 30 or less than 10 or something like that.
Right. You just go by the 10 because that's,
And the tax rate, there's no before, sooner or later, is just before the 5th day.
5 days prior, yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
So besides giving the judge some clarity on what the court wishes to be in the proposed budget, there's no necessity for the proposing of the tax break today. They got plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to have the proposed tax rate number 26.
Get in the paper on the 30th
for later.
However, there is a requirement to have a proposed rate that is filed with the proposed budget.
But it does say in 111 that the budget officer in proposing a budget shall include the amount of revenues to be raised by taxes and the statement regarding the level of those. I don't remember exactly how it's worded, but you are correct. Which, to be fair, you've done every year that you've been county judge without the commissioner's court proposing a tax rate in my food. I certainly could stand to be corrected. But
I would say that's a fair assessment. And I would also say that the last two, I believe that I proposed, the court took a different action after the proposed rate.
You very well do again.
Which they could very well could do again. But I would like to have a proposed rate so that when I'm answering questions and giving explanations, there is a basis for that proposed rate. And I believe that's.
I make a motion to take no action on the proposed tax rate for the tax year of 2025 today.
There is a motion to take no action on the paperwork covered up. Item number 8.
Second.
There is a second from Commissioner Weddle. Any further discussion on item number 8? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ms. Newton, would you call the roll, please?
Judge, I'd like a point of order.
Noting a point of order.
Roll call votes are only required under statute. In order for a roll call vote to happen within a body of a commission of court, it requires a second motion of two-thirds vote or a majority to have a roll call vote. And that is according to Robert's Rules online order.
Okay, very good. All right, given that, the proposed tax rate is required to have a roll call vote. Even though a tax rate was not proposed, the item was to consider proposing a tax rate. So that there is a record that this court took no action, I believe, is in compliance with the state statutes.
There is a record. You can require us to raise our hands. You can require us to stand. But you cannot require a roll call vote unless it is statutorily required. I'd be glad to raise my hand if anybody needs that, but I second the motion and I voted yay on the thing for that. We do not need a roll call vote on that.
I believe we do. So you can either vote yay, you can vote nay, you can abstain from voting. You can have your vote go down as present but not voting. Those are all options that are available to you. But I do believe that it warrants, because there is a requirement under a proposed rate, even though a rate was not proposed, that was the item at hand. And we can take it up with the Attorney General's office if you would like. We're more than welcome to do that. So with that, Ms. Newton,
No, we're not ready for this, Judge. No, you're stepping outside your bounds.
No, I'm not, Commissioner.
May I read this, please, sir?
I believe we had a motion and a second. That's what's on the floor, okay? I gave an opportunity for discussion. All right, there was no further discussion. I called for a vote, a record vote, Right. And you wanted to inject,
and we voted.
You want to inject. It is.
And it passed.
And
motion passed.
It says that there should be a record vote on a proposed tax rate. But the action was taken on that item. So there is a difference of opinion. I tell you what, you're more than welcome, Commissioner. You're more than welcome to sign up in December if you want this seat. I welcome that. You're more than welcome to.
The responsibility of announcing or declaring the vote rests upon the chair.
Yes.
And he therefore has the right to have the vote taken again by rising, if is he in doubt for the results, to even have the vote counted if necessary. He cannot have the vote taken by ballot or by a yes or no roll call unless it is required by the rules or a vote of the assembly. Later on, it talks about when a quorum is met, which requires a two-thirds vote, the plurality never adopt the motion or elect to have an office unless virtue or special. So it clearly states that only under statute, which the two that were required, actually three, during the budgeting process, is to approve the proposed tax rate, to vote on approval of the adopted tax rate, and a roll call vote for adopting the budget. Those are the only three that I can find statutorily that require a roll call vote. In the past, you've called a roll call vote whenever you felt, but in the future, it'll require a two-thirds vote by this court to have a special roll call vote. That's the rules.
Thank you for your interpretation.
Okay.
All right. Ms. Newton, if you would call the roll, please.
Commissioner Basham, how do you vote? Commissioner Matthews, how do you vote? Judge Miller, how do you vote?
No.
Commissioner Taylor, how do you vote? Commissioner Whittle, how do you vote?
For purposes of your minutes, if you would annotate that the commissioners were present and not voting. Thank you. Number 9 on the agenda is to consider the contract for county health insurance from Curative for budget year 2026. I believe that contract went out to everyone. I believe Mr. Belt provided some comments related to that. Is there any action that the court wishes to take on the Curative contract?
Well, Mr. Belt, this is obviously going to require much of your interaction. You had some questions. I think we will all agree that when it comes to contracts like this, even here in the court and even in our personal lives, sometimes all the fine print and everything, we don't fully read or sometimes don't understand. And then we put our faith and hope that there's industries that have rules and regulations. I read through it. I've had to approve contracts in my life before. But I guess I would turn that over to you, Mr. Bell, to maybe express your concerns again or questions, and if we don't have questions, would it be worthy of entertaining an outside expert in healthcare contracts to review this?
Well, I can't answer your last question because I haven't got any information on my previous questions. I have not seen a copy of our current contract. I have no idea what the termination provisions are in it, what any of the provisions in it are for whatever the word that I used in my email was of the contract for the continuation of care moving forward on claims. I have not seen a copy of the contract for insurance for the, I believe it's called the gap coverage.
Stop loss coverage.
Yeah. And I have not seen any details on how they're going to configure our, I think they call it participation credit, moving forward. And so, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I can't clearly articulate to you what our deal with Curative is. Even in layman's terms, I can't do it. I don't have the information to do that. I've not been provided any information whatsoever in response to any of my concerns. I've not seen a copy of our Scott White policy, our stop loss policy, or the details of how they're going to figure whatever that credit's called at the end of the term. I mean, generally speaking, the contract is fine. But it's the details, the business details that are missing, not the contract. I mean, contract provisions are in there. They're crystal clear. It's the business provisions that are missing. So, legally, the contract's fine, but I don't know what kind of deal we're making. Can't tell. The hope is comply with our provisions in Scott and Life contract. I have no idea. Yeah. I'd be more happy to look at it, but somebody could find it. I do not have a point of contact with Scott and Life to request it, so I have not done so.
Unfortunately, you're pointing out one of our weaknesses in this county is we do not have a single repository for all contracts. Sometimes they reside in, people's offices.
Well, Commissioner, I believe there is a single repository. You'd have to look back to previous elected officials, whether they entered those into the repository for those or not.
Based on that, I guess the assumption would be that the Baylor Scott and White contract, when we approved it in court, should have gone on the record then with the county clerk. Would that be
the
natural progression?
I have never seen the Baylor Scott and White contract. We have approved renewals. And I believe all of those, at least in my tenure, have been filed with the county clerk.
But one of my confusions, in the contract was we elected a plan that did not have the individual stop loss. I don't know why they
seems to clearly state that they are going to. So the way I understand this, I'm certainly not a healthcare insurance attorney, but the way I read their contract is that They're going to pay claims out of the money we send them every month until they run out of that money. And then they're going to file a claim against our insurance that we're providing through some carrier for this stop loss so that they don't lose any money to cover those claims that exceed what we pay every month. And then at the end of the term, best I can tell, if they have paid out less than we have paid in, less some amount that I cannot determine for the administration of the health care plan, we get a benefit from that to carry forward. That's the way I read it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly, I guess I could be wrong, but that's the way I read it. I don't know. But I don't know what those numbers are. I can't discern what those numbers are. I can't discern from the contract documents how much of our monthly premium goes towards paying for the stop-loss contract for insurance coverage, which the judge signed an application for insurance for stop-loss, not for health care through security, but through a vendor for stop-loss coverage. They sent that document to the judge to sign for an application for insurance for that. I can't tell what the premium is for that, which is going to be deducted from our monthly payment to them. And I can't tell what the administrative fees are that are going to be charged against our monthly contribution to them. I have no idea what kind of deal we're making. I read the contract, got a bunch of legal crap in it. It all makes sense, perfect sense. It's all fine. It's got all the stuff in it about getting in and out and all that. It's all in there. I'm comfortable with the contract language. I just don't know what kind of deal we're making. And I can't tell from our contract documents. And it is crystal clear that our entire agreement is contained within these documents. That's what it says. So if they made a deal, if they presented y'all with something in their sales pitch, and it's not in this contract, it doesn't exist. So if they told y'all, y'all's rate for us administering this is going to be 10%, and it turns out they go charging us 13, 14, 15%. It's not in here anywhere. We can't say, oh, no, you can't do that. It just says the amount charged for administration. It doesn't say what that amount's going to be. I read every word of 42 pages, or how many pages was it? And I might have missed it, but I don't think so. And it does not refer to any documents that are not attached. And there are at least two attached. I can't find those numbers in there either.
This court chose to issue a request for proposals for health insurance coverage. This court chose not to solicit requests for qualifications for a health insurance broker. And this court has chosen to negotiate this contract on its own. At this point, question is to consider the contract for county health insurance from Curative for budget year 2026. Does the court have an action that they're willing to take?
Mr. Bell, so you would like to have the original contract for Baylor Scott & White or the latest renewal?
It shows to be broken down. That he shows to be broken down in that picture. But other than that, I mean, that's not going to be here.
Right.
See, I don't know. So that's our contract premium then, I guess, for the stop loss contract.
Right.
So they provided y'all this and their sales.
Thing. Right.
Okay. Yeah, those are the numbers, but they're not in here.
I can't find them. Yeah, I couldn't hear. But I mean, that's the.
So what about the. What about the. Okay, so I think it does say here 50% of the amounts of the amount at the end of the year.
Right.
You know, with the sheriff, you have to know about it. Based on these calculations. Yeah, those are the numbers that I think would be in the contract.
If you like this, then this is your cap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they back your place better.
Got a question. Have we ever received any kind of money back from Baylor Scott & White?
I have no idea. So, just to answer your question, I didn't agree with that.
I'm sorry.
I didn't figure that.
Agree to what?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure this out.
Oh, I with a question, and you know, as you have, you know, pointed out, and I think maybe most of us are aware that you are an advisor, but not a member of the court. And I said the court. I kept that specifically to the court.
Because I would like a copy of whatever document from Scott & White that has the terms and conditions of our agreement in it. Now, I've looked at the renewals. I found a bunch of the renewals. They don't say much. They say something about, I don't remember, master agreement or whatever they refer back to that I cannot find. And I have never seen it. Nobody's ever, asked me to look at it. Nobody's ever, nothing. So I don't just go look for stuff to do. I've got plenty that finds its way to me on its own. I never have gone and looked at the Scott & White contract to see what the terms and conditions of it are. I've never seen it. In 20 years, I've not seen it. I've seen the renewals, and they refer back to some master services agreement or whatever they call it. It's a term. It clearly says it in there, what it refers back to.
Ms. Belt,
they don't have any. I don't think that any of our agreement with them had anything, any language in it that they agreed to give us any credit for anything. They were strictly charging us a fee to provide us coverage. Anything they made, period. Mm-hmm. They set an amount they want to make every year, and if we fall below that amount, they raise our rates to meet that amount at least. Mm-hmm. And they hope to make more than that off of us. Mm-hmm. That is their business plan. Crystal clear. They've stood right here and said it. So I know that's their business plan. I know they mean it. There wasn't any calculation. There was no other policy that we purchased for to fill any gap or anything. This is a completely different setup from Scott & White's health plan's current plan that we have.
Yes, it is.
And I really, I mean, the only reason I'm curious what Scott & White's health plan says is because of the language in here about the carryover claims and who's responsible for those and who administers those and such. I think they're willing to, I should go back and look at them, but I'm pretty sure they're willing to take care of that if that's what needs to be done, period, is the way I read it. They're willing to help with transition claims, whatever they call it. Because there's going to be somebody's going to get a bill for stuff that happened 1 month. You got the next and stuff that was a continuation of care. And I mean, there's going to be a cluster right there at the beginning that somebody's going to have to work through and administer. And I would like to know what Scott & White's contract says about that, just so we can prepare ourselves for employees' questions and concerns. I can't answer any of them.
The treasurer's office trying to get a hold of curative to add those numbers, administrative fees, etc., to that contract where it's through the binding. So he's trying to reach out to him real quick.
I don't know where the original Scott and White contract is. It's not anywhere in my electronic files. I do not believe that it's in the county clerk's, you know, database. I don't know where that document is. And I don't know how far our health care coverage goes back with Baylor Scott and White. But I would venture to say it's decades. And this is the first time then in decades that we've transitioned from one healthcare provider to another, or health insurance provider to another. So how those transitions happen, I don't know.
I'd make a motion to table number 9 for now until the treasurer's office gets back.
There is a motion to table item number 9 on the agenda from Commissioner Matthews and a second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 9? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 10 is to consider setting the county contribution amount for retiree health insurance. Based off of a formula, which I'm not aware of where it came up from or, you know, how it derived, but for individuals who have retired from the county after a certain number of service years are eligible for health insurance through the county, and we make a contribution to that health insurance premium. Again, I do not know where the exact numbers come from, but if you've been with the county for a certain amount of years, you get a 50% contribution. If you've been with the county another seven numbers of years, you get 100% contribution. So currently, under Baylor Scott and White, 818 is what we have contributed as the contribution amount, and then it becomes a percentage of that amount that the retiree would be responsible for, dependent upon their number of years of service to the county.
You said it was 800 what?
818. The employee only rate is what we're contributing right now, based off of our previous contract with Baylor Scott and White, because that was the employee only.
Just I can give you the history of this. Whenever I took office 20 years ago, it was there was this percentage deal was not in place. We didn't have hardly any retirees. It was, you know, 1, 2s, and 3s, and most of them were 65 or close to it, and so it was a minor issue. It was just done, and our insurance went up. You'll be amazed to know the amount at the time was, it went up to employee only, it was $411, I believe, the amount. And so the court had to do something, because $411 per retiree was just killing them. Put that amount in perspective, now it's more than twice that. But so the court decided at that time, which would have been about 16, 17, 18 years ago, I had not been the county attorney long, that they had to set an amount. They weren't going to pay 100% for somebody that hadn't worked for the county but for 15 years. What? So they came up with this provision that was put in the county handbook at the time and has been in every county handbook since then, that had this percentage contribution based on years of service. So now for some, over 15 years, this has been in place where if you work for the commissioner's court set this, however many years ago it was, if you have less than 15 years of service and you retire from the county, they're going to contribute zero. Okay. So you can retire from the county with less than 15 years of service, actually, obviously.
to you, but the county's not going to pay any towards your retirement. There you're up. Your retiree health insurance. Now, you can stay on our health insurance if you retire from the county, but they're going to lose to zero. And then you've got over 15 years, 50%, got over 20 years, 75%, you've got over 25 years, 100% of the contribution amount, which is to be set by the court prior to October 1st of every year. And that is, I'm not sure that the language of this provision of our handbook has changed hardly at all since it was initially passed. None of the numbers and amounts have changed since it was passed.
And that is only up to when they are eligible for
65
Medicare. Yeah.
There you go.
He stops at 65.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
We currently have 10 retirees is the number that I've received, which presently our contributions are $73,500 a year. For simplicity, and I think, you know, if we continue with the curative route, if we set that contribution at $800, the difference that any of the retirees would pay would more than make up for itself with the reduced cost that they would pay out over the year for their health care. And, you know, just medicines, medical visits, it would really be pretty much a wash. I think it would be a savings to them overall. But that sets a calculation that we can put into the budget and have a fixed amount that would be known.
Fine with that.
Sounds reasonable.
I address the court as one of those 10 retirees.
Yes, Ms. Jones.
What changes in the policy for them? Is the policy manual changing? Because right now it says you serve 25 years, you'll get 100%.
100% of our contribution amount.
Yes.
That's what we're setting today is the contribution amount.
Setting the contribution amount, but you're not changing in the policy anymore? Am I missing something?
No, we're following the policy manual. Policy manual says we set the contribution amount. And then based off of your years of service with the county, then you receive a percentage of that. So if you work for the county greater than 25 years, the county would provide 100% of the contribution amount. Did I say that correctly? I mean, I just want to make sure I said.
He's not changing. They're just setting the contribution amount. Nothing's changing except for
the. Yeah, the percentage is not changing. It's just a dollar.
$818. So, is there any action that the court wishes to take under item number 10?
I make a motion to set the county's contribution amount for retiree's health care at $800.
We've got a motion to set the county's contribution at $800 from Commissioner Matthews.
Second.
Second from Commissioner Taylor. Is there any further discussion on item number 10? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 11 is to consider vehicle registration optional fees for Coryell County for 2026. Sent the information out from the Texas Department of Motor Vehicles to you in your packet. Basically, you have option A, which is no change. And for as long as I've been in office, we have selected option A. Option B is to set a road and bridge fee, but we are currently at our maximum fee that we can charge for road and bridge. Then you have a transportation project fee, but that is only applicable to the counties that are listed there. And then there is a child safety fee. However, I don't believe we have school districts that qualify or would meet those requirements for the child safety fee. So I believe that the action that I would ask of the court today is to impose optional fees for calendar year 2026 at no change.
So moved.
Got a motion from Commissioner Taylor for option A of no change. Second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion on item number 11? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 12 on the agenda is to consider the appointment of Felicia Inman to the Central County Services Board for a two-year term beginning September 1, 2025 through August 31st, 2027. Ms. Inman has served in that capacity since 2023. This would be her second term. The county has two representatives that serve on that board, one being Ms. Inman and the other being Mr. Ray Ashby.
Second. So move. If you were making the motion, I don't know if you were making it or not.
I was just stating, so motion from Commissioner Matthews to approve the appointment of Ms. Inman. Second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 12? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 13 on the agenda is discussion and action on the order of election for November 4th of 2025. Mr. Carruthers provided a copy of that order that went out in your packet. If you've got any questions, I would, since we have Mr. Carruthers here, I would recommend the court to direct questions concerning the order of the special election to Mr. Carruthers.
Discussion. I think I'll get this right. I'll make a motion that we approve an election order to be held on November 4th, 2025 in Coryell County, Texas for voting in a special election to consider constitutional amendments.
Second.
Got a motion to approve a special election order from Commissioner Weddle, a second from Commissioner Matthews. Any further discussion on item number 13? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 14 is to consider a budget amendment number 9 for the county agents. Budget amendment number 9, I believe, did go out in your packet. And that is a line item transfer.
Make motion to approve budget amendment number 9.
Second.
A motion from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 14? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Item number 15 is to consider budget amendment number 10 for the sheriff's office. Again, I believe that is a line item transfer to allow for the purchase of an automobile.
I make a motion for the budget amendment for FY 2025, number 10.
Thank you.
Got a motion to approve budget amendment number 10 from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Basham. Any further discussion on item number 15? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries.
Make a motion to take a recess for 10 minutes and get an update on Scott White and Cure to Business.
There is a motion to recess on the floor from Commissioner Matthews.
Second
from Commissioner Weddle. I believe you said 10 minutes. Is that correct?
I believe that's all it'll take, sir.
Okay. Do you mind if I round up and call it 10:35?
10:35, amen.
Okay. We are in recess until 10:35. Okay, I've got 10:38. We'll reconvene in open session, picking up with item number 16 on the agenda, which is to pay bills. Based on a previous action that the court took today, in an effort to expedite the transfer of the vehicle, I would ask that we add an additional $47,500 to the bills to be considered. And then that would allow the sheriff's office to go ahead and execute the purchase and the transfer of that vehicle. With that, if the court chooses the $47,500 addition, that would bring our total bills to $1,320,319.64.
Yeah, $1,320,319.64. Correct?
Confirmed.
Yeah. Make a motion to pay
bills. Got a motion to pay bills from Commissioner Matthews, second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 16? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. Reports, Commissioner Matthews.
School starting back. Everybody drive friendly. What for the young one? And if you have young ones still in school, okay, that's very important.
Very good. Commissioner Weddle?
Kind of report questions. So when we come back from executive session, we will still be able to schedule future meetings if needed, correct? Item on nine.
There could be an action taken under item nine that could include
additional meetings
too.
I had nothing.
Okay, Commissioner Basham.
No, Carroll County Youth or Ag Saturday.
Yes, the Carroll County Youth Fair fundraisers this Saturday night.
Yeah, at the complex.
Yeah, third or fourth strong.
Yes. Y'all, anybody wants tickets? Y'all, please come to that. Sports our youth. It's good cause. Good thing.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Taylor?
Well, they done told all mine, so I guess I'm good.
You get it for being last.
I think maybe some of you are aware, if not most of you, but condolences go out to Coach Les and his wife, Carla Reeves. The passing of their son Jim. They've been cornerstone of the Gatesville and Coryell County community for several decades. Keep them in your thoughts and prayers. Just a tragic loss. We do have a closed meeting executive session set under item number 19. So pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.071, the Commissioner's Court will conduct a closed meeting to consult with the county attorney regarding pending litigation and a matter subject to attorney-client confidentiality to include, but not limited to, that case of the County of Coryell versus Purdue Pharma. Coming out of that executive session, there is an item to be considered. as far as participation in opioid litigation. And I would remind those that are listening that there is a tabled item which potentially the court may consider following that executive session. So with that, we are in recess. We will reconvene in the front conference room at 10:50. Okay, I've got 11:31. We'll reconvene in open session, picking up with item number 20 on the agenda, which is to consider subdivision participation and release forms for opioid litigation settlement. There have been two forms that have been provided to the court, identified as Appendix C and Appendix K. And is there any action that the court wishes to take under, I'm sorry, Exhibit, not Appendix, Exhibit C and Exhibit K that's been, as it's been presented?
Make a motion to approve the subdivision participation and release form for the litigation settlement C and K.
Second.
We got a motion to approve the exhibits from Commissioner Matthews, a second from Commissioner Taylor. Any further discussion on item number 20? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. There is one other item that had been previously tabled without resolution, would be item number 9, which is to consider the contract for county health insurance from Curative for budget year 2026.
They have signed this contract, Judge. Where's the signature? Are you signing or are you signing?
I believe I'm signing.
You're signing this book?
Yes.
I would be comfortable with y'all's approval contract with the inclusion of the information set forth in their proposal regarding the administrative fees and stop loss premiums. You've got that piece of paper, you know what those numbers are. Y'all all know what they are. They're in the proposal cap that y'all accepted. Just approve the contract with the inclusion of those numbers in them for the administrative fees and stop loss premium. Those are the two numbers that need to be included in the contract. The rates in there need to stop loss fee, administrative fees included in the contract. And as soon as you get a contract with those numbers in there, that's on the documents y'all all have, sign and ship it in. Get the document in the court.
Sir, if you're asking for everything, I'd have to put the claims fund in there also, which that way all the math adds up.
Let me make you a copy of this.
No, I'm good. Okay.
If you're okay with that, Judge, it wouldn't require, I mean, the contract is fine with the inclusion of those numbers in it. And you know what those numbers are. You're okay. You're not signing it. You're okay with that. Just get them approved contract. Once those numbers are included, roll on.
If a member of the court would make a motion to approve the contract with the inclusion of our contingent upon the inclusion of the admin fees and the stop loss fees, I would be more than willing to accept that as a motion, and I would execute that document upon receipt and concurrence that you're satisfied that those numbers are reflected in the actual contract as opposed to just a precursor to the contract.
Second.
Motion to approve the contract from Commissioner Basham, a second from Commissioner Matthews.
Again, I would like the claims fund to be in there, too, because that makes it all add up. So admin, SL premium, and the claims fund, because then that shows exactly what we're going to pay.
Commissioner Bastrom, since I did not articulate the claims fund in there, is your motion... are you still comfortable with the motion you made?
Yes,
and Commissioner Matthews, are you still comfortable with the second to that motion?
I am.
Okay. Any further discussion considering concerning item number 9? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Ayes have it, motion carries. That concludes the business of the court today. We stand adjourned. Thank you. Mm-hmm.